Welcome back, friends. Welcome back to The Corbett Report. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you are tuned into Solutions Watch. And this week on the D program, we have a special guest to talk about something that I know is of concern to, or should be of concern, to all Corbett Reporteers out there, and in fact, the rest of humanity, whether they know it or not. And that is the threat of fiat money itself, and specifically the coming form of fiat money in a new monetary paradigm, which the general public is gradually becoming aware of, i.e. digital currencies, specifically central bank-issued digital currencies of various sorts, and the tokenization of the economy, and all of the things that are attendant upon that threat. As I say, you will know about that if you are a regular viewer or listener of the Corbett Report, and if not, you have some catching up to do, and I might humbly suggest you type CBDC into the Corbett Report search bar to start learning more about this impending threat to human liberty. But we are not here to talk about the threat and the danger and what is wrong, so much as we are here to talk about what we can actually do about this, because unless and until we start taking our monetary independence into our own hands, we are doomed. So, let us not be doomed. And on that note, I am excited to bring on a new guest onto the program, someone who has not been on the Corbett Report before, but hopefully you will be familiar with him because I did include a link to a recent podcast appearance he made on the Free Thought Project podcast. I included that link in my most recent subscriber newsletter editorial as a recommended listening. I hope you did listen to that. I hope you also caught him on Freedom's Phoenix, Declare Your Independence radio show with Ernest Hancock recently. But if not, here he is himself. His name is Aaron Day, and I will throw the link into his website and any other relevant material there. But let's bring him on the program. Aaron Day, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Since this is your first time, why don't we just start by talking about yourself, your background? Why and how did you get into liberty activism, and what have you been doing over the years?
Sure. So I started out as a serial entrepreneur. I started my first tech company in 1995, an internet company, which I sold and then got involved in venture capital for a very short period of time. I call that the dark side, and then went back to becoming an entrepreneur again, started a healthcare company in 2004, which is a very simple company that offered financial incentives to reward employees for improving their health. And it was a successful company, profitable. We had clients in 43 states. We were helping employers lower their health insurance costs and while at the same time helping employees improve their health. And the business was basically destroyed by Obamacare, Dodd-Frank, and the DOJ. We weren't specifically targeted, actually, with all three of those. We were actually just collateral damage. So no one specifically came after my company. It was just wiped out due to, you know, the growth of the state and the unintended consequences of gigantic regulation. So that set me on a path to become a liberty activist, which I have been since really 2009. I moved to New Hampshire as part of the Free State Project, which is, if your audience isn't aware, it's a movement to get 20,000 people to move to New Hampshire and make New Hampshire basically the liberty beacon for the world. And I got involved in a lot of political activism, running super PACs, other organizations, helping candidates get elected. I even ran for office myself. And somewhere along in there, I was introduced to Bitcoin through the Free State Project in 2012. Which I started to use, actually, in New Hampshire. New Hampshire is a unique place. New Hampshire, at least at one point, had the highest per capita usage of crypto anywhere in the world. There have been restaurants and stores that have been taking cryptocurrency directly going all the way back to 2012. And in fact, the Free State Project, we have two big events every year, Liberty Forum and Pork Fest, and we've been accepting cryptocurrency for payment for well over a decade. So that was my first introduction to it. And I was even using crypto for political activism. I raised money using crypto, paid volunteers and activists using crypto. And finally, after, you know, about 2018, I realized there is no political solution to this. We can't vote our way out of our current situation. So as much as I spent a lot of time doing that activism, I realized there's got to be a better way. So I started focusing on living off of crypto entirely. So in 2019, I exited fiat and have been living off of crypto exclusively. And after the COVID tyranny happened, some other things started to happen. I was seeing my friends and fellow liberty activists in New Hampshire being targeted by the federal government. Jeremy Kaufman, who's a free stater, started a company called Library, which is also Odyssey. He was targeted by the SEC, and that business was actually bankrupted. The technology still exists, but the company was completely destroyed. Ian Freeman, who I learned about Bitcoin from, Ian Freeman and Mark Edge, who have a radio show called Free Talk Live. I was at his Ian's sentencing hearing. So Ian is in federal prison for 8 years for the simple act of selling Bitcoin. And then most recently, a couple of weeks ago, Roger Ver, who is another person who was influential, who I just interviewed a few weeks ago, left the United States, became a citizen of St. Kitts, and changed, you know, entirely his situation. He's no longer an American citizen and was nabbed by in Spain for United States tax evasion. And so I started to look into, what is all of this about? Why are crypto people, and in particular pro-liberty crypto people, being targeted? And what I found out is it's to usher in CBDCs. And I know we're not going to go into a lot of detail on this here, but what I found in researching this is that CBDCs are much further along than people think. The United States has already done 3 successful CBDC pilots. President Biden has signed an executive order both authorizing the exploration of a CBDC and the complete whole of government cracking down on crypto, which we're seeing. I mean, we're seeing this everywhere, whether it's crypto exchanges or even buying crypto in person or privacy coins. They are going after crypto from every angle imaginable through the federal government. And so once I realized that CBDCs were a threat, I actually wrote a book about it called The Final Countdown. I even ran for president, not because I thought I could change it electorally, but to try to raise the profile of this issue. And I'm now at the Brownstone Institute, where I'm going around the country doing 4-hour workshops, teaching people about the CBDC threat, but more importantly, empowering people to do something about it by getting self-custody crypto, gold, and silver, and beginning to use those in day-to-day transactions.
What a fascinating story. And it just proves once again that there are many paths that will lead people to the pursuit of liberty and liberty activism. And one of them certainly could be your business being destroyed, not even by intentionally by some sort of government program or what have you, but just as a second order knock on collateral damage effect. And that might shake some people out of their slumbers, as it were. Well, it is good to see more and more people coming to the reality that we do need to pursue liberty as a goal in our pursuits, because obviously the alternative is tyranny. So let's talk about the monetary aspect of this. And I am fascinated by the idea that since, if I've got this right, since 2019, you have been living 100% fiat free, no fiat whatsoever.
No fiat whatsoever. I mean, there are some, you know, some of this involves buying gift cards and debit cards, but yeah, no personal bank account. I have not figured out. I'm still working on the corporate side of getting my organization completely off. But I'm actually close to that. I actually am within a few steps of actually being able to complete that as well.
Well, let's talk about the mechanics of that, because I'm sure people would be fascinated about that. I mean, I can only imagine how I would go about making myself completely fiat free. At least in Japan, it seems well nigh impossible. But what kinds of difficulties have you faced, and how did you overcome them over those 5 years?
Well, what's interesting about it is it's become more difficult, actually, in the last couple of years. It was easier before. And to give you a little timeline, so I got my first Bitcoin in 2012. And so I used to use Bitcoin, which is now known as BTC, again, directly at stores. And when you go to Porkfest here in New Hampshire, this Free State Project event, they have a thing called Agora Alley. And so people are buying and selling exclusively with cash or gold or crypto. But a lot of those are organizations that continue to exist long after Porkfest. So there are farms here where you can buy meat with crypto and alternative currencies. You can get raw milk. I have one advantage is that being in New Hampshire, there's actually already a built-in group of people already accepting these currencies. And that's just simply not the case in other places. And so I would say that there's a percentage that I can just buy directly because I happen to be in a community of people that are already accepting cryptocurrencies. And a lot of people aren't aware, when we were moving into 2017, Bitcoin adoption was becoming very, very popular. There were big retailers, Overstock.com, Expedia, Microsoft, Steam, big retailers that were taking Bitcoin directly. And I won't go into a whole dynamic about what happened with the hijacking of Bitcoin, but there were some things that happened in 2017, and then Bitcoin BTC no longer became usable as cash. And then people started with this narrative of BTC is digital gold. And that's problematic because central banks and governments are working on developing digital cash, not digital gold. They're actually working on a digital form of cash to replace fiat. And it's just basically, I mean, our fiat is already backed at fiat as it is anyway. There's already a surveillance component to it, and the value is eroding to zero, and banks no longer have reserve requirements. And so there's really no reason to use fiat. Some people will say to me, well, CBDC is not much worse than we currently have. And my answer is, yeah, you're right. You should get out of fiat anyway. But there is an additional level of programmability that comes with CBDCs. And so now that BTC has this other narrative of being a store of value, we actually need alternatives. And so my journey on this has been actually moving around to different cryptocurrencies. So I'm not what's called a maximalist. I use whatever works. And my primary criteria is I want something that's not centralized. I want something that is censorship resistant, that can't be, you know, if you have a cryptocurrency that is owned and run by a centralized company, then that company can be targeted and shut down by the government and you can lose access to that cryptocurrency. So I look for coins that are like Bitcoin Cash or Monero or Litecoin or Zcash, coins that are completely decentralized and that may also have some privacy elements to them. However, the challenge with this becomes when I'm traveling, because right now I spend most of my time traveling, what I often have to do is buy gift cards or debit cards that I can use. So, I mean, I'm still using fiat, I guess, in a way, but it's not my bank account. So I'm using these alternative services. And so so I will tell you what I've used over time and then also tell you that like where I am today, because it's shifted so much just since 2022. So, I mean, if this were 4 years ago, 5 years ago, I was using primarily Bitcoin Cash and I was using a service called BitPay, which you can check out. So BitPay allows you, depending upon where you live, you can actually pay your bills directly through BitPay. I mean, in some cases you can pay your mortgage directly. You can pay your cell phone bill, you can pay everything directly through BitPay. Now, BitPay doesn't have that service actually even in New Hampshire. So it's actually limited to a certain set of states. But through BitPay, you can buy gift cards for large retailers, and then you could buy a debit card. They had a BitPay branded debit card. So what I would do is when I needed to make some purchases and it wasn't somewhere in New Hampshire and I needed to be able to make a payment, I would transfer a certain amount of – I never leave anything on exchanges or even any centralized service at all or even something like BitPay. I mean, I never put more than a month's worth of crypto value on any hosted solution because I just always assume that that's at risk. So whenever I need to pay bills, that's where I'm going to interface with these systems. And so I use this BitPay debit card for a number of years. But then all of a sudden, out of the blue, I believe it was last year – you may recall we had those four big bank failures, Silicon Valley Bank and Signature and others. And even though the bank that BitPay was working with wasn't one of the four, they were kind of taken, their banking partner was taken down as part of that. And so they haven't recovered. So now I'm in a situation where I have to switch cryptocurrencies. So I may have to switch, for instance, from Bitcoin Cash to using Litecoin and then use Litecoin with a different debit card provider. So I've had to use, so I have like four or five different debit cards and honestly, it is inconvenient. So there's this kind of back and forth of I have to shuffle between this coin and this coin. So there's a service called BitPay. There's a service called Spritz Finance. And so these are kind of two big ones that you can use that have similar services in that they both offer direct bill pay. They both offer gift cards, and then Spritz Finance actually has a debit card now that you can use. And I'm waiting for BitPay. I believe BitPay will find another solution, and they will be providing debit cards. But it's a lot of back and forth between these services and switching between coins at the moment. That's actually – and that's – so it's become more complicated. But moving forward, I've actually started really experimenting and even moving more into gold and silver. So – I was almost exclusively crypto, and I'm moving towards kind of a balance between crypto, gold, and silver. And I don't know if your audience is aware of these. I'm holding a gold back These are phenomenal. These are this is 1/1000th of an ounce of gold, so it's worth about $5. And they have different denominations from 1/1000th of an ounce up to 1/50th of an ounce is the largest denomination. And so there are 2,000 merchants in the United States that already accept goldbacks. There are 150 merchants in New Hampshire that accept goldbacks. But often what I will do, so I got a haircut the other day, and I will pay the tip often in goldbacks, and I have a business card with a QR code that people can scan to learn about what it means. And so the one benefit of these goldbacks is they're visually stunning, and there's no technology required to understand how it works. And so far the experience that I've had in giving people these goldbacks is one of joy and interest in learning more. I've also been dealing a lot with silver, I mean, in different denominations. And so you can get silver in, you know, 1/10 of an ounce, 1/5 of an ounce, 1 ounce. And I think that's going to become more popular as well. They did make a silver back at one point in a limited edition, but it was too cost prohibitive to actually make the silver back. But who knows, if the price of silver keeps on going up and the price of gold keeps on going up, who knows what's going to happen. But there's a whole new set of things happening along the lines of tokenized gold and tokenized silver. So for instance, I have a goldback account that I can log into, and I can actually go to merchants that accept goldbacks, and I can pay them online through an online system so that I'm not even handling the physical goldback. Now, of course, the challenge with this is when I'm using that system, those are vaulted goldbacks that are at a centralized facility in Utah. So there still is that amount of risk. So I go back to the story that I mentioned, or my example before, which is I never keep more than a month's worth of crypto at any moment in time in any one of these services for the purpose of paying bills. And that same methodology applies to tokenized gold and tokenized silver. But I do think that this is very fascinating because I'm waiting to receive it in the mail, but I will have a debit card shortly that is actually tied directly to gold and silver. So I don't need to actually interface with fiat. I can actually use my goldback account. So I'm never sitting with any value, any you know, quote, value stored in fiat. And when I need to pay bills, I can actually transfer the appropriate fiat amount is expressed in gold and silver. In fact, there's a clever technique where you essentially pawn the gold or silver to yourself, and using the different pawning laws, you don't even have to pay the capital gains tax based on how these unique laws work with respect to pawning. So this is something that I'm getting into more. And I'm also experimenting with, there are some services that allow you to buy tokenized gold that you can then use the tokenized gold and silver to buy crypto. So this is yet another level of not using fiat as the main on-ramp where the question is, so what is your base currency? You know, if you were to ask me, what is my base currency? And I'd say, well, I mean, I flip around between some of these. And honestly, it's not that stable. You know, I will tell you, having lived off crypto since 2019, It's kind of weird. I learned something about this in general sense, also as it relates to kind of health. You know, we really live better kind of doing sprints and then recovery, as opposed to just applying an equal level of effort at all times. There really is some kind of, we're wired to do more of the sprint and then a recovery model for a variety of different activities. And it's like that living off crypto. So if crypto prices are low, my spending is low. So I keep my spending and my core burn rate is little as possible. And then when crypto is up, that's when I make capital investments. That's when I make larger purchases. So I'll buy a new computer, or I'll upgrade things kind of based on that cycle. And so as you can imagine, with the volatility in crypto since 2019, I've had some, you know, kind of fasting spells, as it were, with respect to spending. I actually like silver and gold now more as kind of the concept of using that as the store of value and kind of as a base, because it'll provide a little bit more stability than I've had with crypto. So kind of splitting it up a little bit more in terms of gold and silver versus crypto as the store of value. But it in all cases, the store of value is going to be crypto, gold, or silver, never in fiat.
absolutely fascinating. And in fact, your story raises a few different things that I hope will resonate with the listeners of the Corbett Report. One of which is you raise the specter of the hijacking of Bitcoin that people who have been following the crypto space for the past 15 years will have seen happen over the years. But you raise the specter of who and what forces were behind that. If people are interested in that story, they could read a book like Hijacking Bitcoin by Roger Ver that was the aforementioned Corbett Report guest, Roger Ver, who, as you say, was just indicted and arrested in Spain, likely to be extradited to the United States in the coming days, weeks, who knows. At any rate, he just released a book on the hijacking of Bitcoin, how that was done, naming the names and talking about the entities behind it. I wonder why suddenly, weeks after releasing that book, he was arrested. If you are interested in that, I would suggest you check out that book and the story behind it and how it relates to people like Joy Ito, which should also be ringing alarm bells for Corbett reporters who know about Joy Ito and his connections to Jeffrey Epstein, etc. Very interesting stuff going on there. Your story also raises the importance of something that I've been stressing over and over and over for years, which is the community aspect of creating a parallel economy. That no matter what wonderful, amazing, perfect monetary system you come up with, if you don't have a community that is supporting it and using it, it's worth nothing. So talking about a place like New Hampshire, where you actually can, there are businesses that accept this, and you actually can live through crypto and or goldbacks and or silver, etc. That's amazing. That's what we need to be developing right now in this window of opportunity before they pull the rug out on it. And people who poo-poo that or don't think that's going to happen or don't want to be part of that, good luck. I genuinely hope good luck for you, because I think we are heading towards some serious times. You raise another important point that you're not a maximalist, that use whatever works. And sometimes that changes and you have to be flexible. And it doesn't mean I will never touch anything that has anything to do with crypto because I don't believe in it, or I will never, ever use gold. And so, no, use what works and use it in varying degrees at varying times and be strategic about it. And it does require you to be flexible and to think and to change. But I think that's probably the only way to actually survive at this point. Again, there's so many important points about what you were saying there, but I think this is all swirling around the central issue that you raise in your book on the final countdown. Final countdown to what? Well, of course, the coming CBDC tyranny and the prospect of a digital lockdown of fiat. As you say, it's not like fiat is so wonderful now, but it's about to get even worse if these people have their way. And I understand you're working on something like a 6-month timeline, deadline to countdown to this takeover or something along those lines. Tell us about that timeline, why it's so important, and what you're working on to counteract that.
Well, yeah. So part of this was when I wrote my book and ran for president, I was sounding the alarm bell. But when I had done that, this was before Ian was sentenced to prison. This was before Roger Ver had been arrested. This was before the folks involved with Samurai Wallet were arrested. This is before the guy with Tornado Cash. So when you write a book like the Final Countdown, you know, people are like, oh, this is over the top. And it turns out this is one of those things where I need to update the book, because if you read it from last June, it's gotten so much worse than what I even projected in the book. And it is part of the political process. I talked to other presidential candidates. I talked to, members of the U.S. Senate. I talked to Ted Cruz, others that are involved in this issue. And the reality of the situation is we have no votes to stop a CBDC. If you think back, we got the Patriot Act 45 days after 9/11. TARP was passed 18 days after Lehman Brothers collapsed. And the $2.2 trillion CARES Act was passed 16 days after COVID was declared a pandemic on a voice vote. And there are people in Congress still that voted for all of those things. So if there's a terror attack or a cyber attack, it will get bipartisan support to push something like this on the basis of stopping money laundering and terrorism. And so as a result of that, what I'm seeing, the reason that we're seeing this crackdown on crypto, in my opinion, is to shut down the alternatives so that they can roll out a CBDC with no opposition. That's why I think this is happening now at a feverish pace. And just what's happened in the last 3 weeks should be alarming, because at this point in time in the United States, there are really only 4 exchanges left to buy crypto. They're all being sued by the SEC. If the IRS is going to require you to declare your self-custody holdings. So they're moving towards a model where they're going to try to ban self-custody next. And so no privacy coins. They might even try to make Monero and things like that illegal. They make it hard to buy, and then you have to report your ownership of it. And when you study the CBDCs that they're trying to roll out, they've been working on this since 2016. And one big mistake people make is, and I've heard this with a lot of libertarian friends, is they say, well, look, Aaron, the government's incompetent. You know, remember the Obamacare website. The government can't possibly roll out a CBDC. It's important to note, the government isn't creating a CBDC. It is the largest banks in the world who are funding the smartest developers in the world to build the CBDC. They've been doing it since 2016. There are at least two Bitcoin core developers that worked on the US retail CBDC. One developer in particular, Corey Fields, his name is on the white paper for the US retail CBDC. So these are the best, smartest people. The only role of the government in passing a CBDC is to pass a bill that the bankers write that they don't read. That is the only role of Congress in passing a CBDC. This is why when I say it's urgent, this is why it's urgent, because I think at this point we should all probably accept that it's pretty likely that they would just sign on to a bill that somebody else wrote in an emergency situation. Now, with that said, having lived off of crypto and knowing that it's become more difficult to use over the years, this hijacking of Bitcoin, and I interviewed Roger as well. In fact, I will take a slight diversion here. There's an event going on this Friday in Washington, D.C., called an Enemies of the State Party. It's at the Libertarian Convention, but you don't have to be a libertarian. It's a free party, open to anyone. We're expecting 700 people there. It's honoring Snowden, Julian Assange, Ross Ulbricht, Ian Freeman, and Roger Ver. And I'm serving the Roger portion of this this event. And it's to honor these people. And I'm honoring Roger by giving away, I've partnered with people to give away Bitcoin Cash in kind of the style of Bitcoin Jesus, because that was his nickname. He's probably given away more Bitcoin and introduced people to this concept. I'm also going to be offering his book for like $10, working with the co-author to make sure that we can spread the word. But this is a, you know, we really want to raise awareness on this, because it's absolutely true that I believe Roger was silenced to make sure that this understanding of what happened to Bitcoin doesn't become widely understood. And then the connections between, because this hasn't been explored that much, the hijacking of Bitcoin and CBDCs. You mentioned Joy Ito, and we won't get into a lot of detail, but Joy Ito funded the developers that made Bitcoin digital gold instead of digital cash. He funded Lightning Network and SegWit, and he funded all three US CBDC pilots. So they made BTC not usable as cash, and then they built a system that can handle 1.8 million transactions per second. That's a CBDC. These are undisputable facts. And now here we are at the last stage of this. So as a solution, the problem is we need to have a competitive solution. The people that are already in crypto or alternative assets because they understand the importance of the separation of money and state, those people are already in. Those people have been in for a long time. The only way we can thwart CBDCs is by actually having a better, faster, cheaper alternative, because they will roll it out in an emergency. We can't stop the fact that there will be an emergency, whether it's a manufactured emergency or whether it's just one that comes up that they try to repurpose for their own purposes. We can't stop the fact that the reaction that people will have is going to be fear. The only thing that we can do is have a competitive alternative. So this week, on Wednesday, I'm going to be announcing a kind of a Manhattan project, call it DEF CON 1, the Manhattan Project. We need to build a open source, not centrally controlled, no corporation, an open source wallet that can also handle silver and gold, that is easy to use, as easy to use or easier than what exists through banks, and easier to use than what they're designing with CBDCs, and a point of sale system for merchants that can handle multiple cryptos, gold and silver, that's also easy to use. Because if we don't have that, we won't be able to onboard people in an emergency, and people will take CBDCs by default under distress because they don't see that they have any other choice. So I'm going to call to put together, to get designers together, to get users and merchants together. I will say that, you know, so I'm a tech entrepreneur going back 30 years, and most crypto has been designed by 20-year-old dudes for 20-year-old dudes. I just very candidly, there hasn't been a lot of thoughtfulness in terms of the user experience. So we should get actual users together. Because money shouldn't be hard to use. Money shouldn't be a technical proposition. And get people from gold, silver, and these various cryptos together that are decentralized. And let's sit down, you know, maybe for a week and hash this out and build a wallet. And you know, that may sound out there, but actually I've already identified there are some existing solutions that we can fork. So we're not going to have to start from scratch. This isn't like building a whole thing from scratch. There are already some things that we can build upon as a base. Because if we do that, then we have a fighting chance. As I mentioned, I do these workshops all over the country. And I was just in San Jose last week in front of 100 people. And, you know, they're older people. I'd say they were mostly boomers, actually, but they have means. They're very intelligent, and they're very passionate about this issue, in part because of COVID tyranny. And then also people that were not otherwise talking about concepts like ending the Fed. Everybody's experienced inflation, and now people are more receptive to these ideas. So as part of this, I gave everybody a gold back. I gave everybody a fifth of an ounce of silver, but trying to onboard them to crypto was just simply too hard. I went through the experience. We did ultimately onboard most of them, but not all of them. But at the very beginning, when I explained to you how I live on crypto and I'm doing this and I'm switching this coin and I use this, that's not a solution. It's something that I've done because I wanted to, you know, cut myself off. But if we're going to be serious about this, the tools have to be easy for the consumer. They have to be easy for the merchant, and they have to accept multiple different options. And that will make it easier for me to do these workshops and to onboard people. If I can give them one tool that they can use, and then we can also invite merchants to the workshops and be like, here's how you can accept different alternative assets. Here's how you can use different alternative assets. Then we can start to build a kind of an army of early adopters. So when that emergency does strike, we can actually provide a competitive alternative to CBDCs.
Excellent. Well, we know about the problem. We know about the vision for a potential solution here. So I think there are probably two classes of people in the audience right now. There's sort of the general listener, and there are liberty-minded coders who might be able to help with your project. First, for the general listener and people who are just interested in learning more about this, you've mentioned the workshops. Tell people about that and where and how they can find out about them.
You can go to day2024.com, and there's a workshop tab. And basically, I'm trying to set these. I have hundreds of people all over the country that have already expressed interest in attending the event. What I'm actually looking for now are groups to sponsor the event, meaning that I need somebody on the ground that knows the local area that can help us secure a venue and that already, you know, already runs events and that can offer it, you know, to a discount for their own members. So when we did this thing in Silicon Valley, which, by the way, was the last place I thought I would ever be doing one of these. But we had a great partner out there, the Liberty Forum of Silicon Valley. And the person that runs that group is phenomenal. And so she actually helped put together some other groups, and they were able to secure the facility. So all we had to do was really travel out there and give the presentation. So I'm really looking for people that maybe run groups or are part of groups that might be able to help sponsor these. And then we have, you know, attendees that want to show up. But that's really what I'm looking for. So we have a sign-up form at day 2024. And I want to do as many of these as I can. Ultimately, I'm going to make it online as well, but nothing beats the in-person experience for something like this. And the interaction, I mean, sitting in a room with 100 people trying to onboard them with crypto, you learn a lot. Like there's no substitute for that experience. And that's part of what actually has motivated me to say, we have to do this Manhattan project, because if we don't, it's just too hard, and it shouldn't be, and it doesn't need to be. We can do better.
That has been the fundamental problem in the crypto space since its inception. It is beyond the grasp of most people, and it's never going to catch on if it remains that way, which is why I know there are liberty-minded coders in the Corbett Report audience who might be interested in a project like this and see the utility of saving humanity. Essentially, that is the task that is facing us, and you can't stress it too strongly. So for people in the audience who are interested in contributing to this idea of an open source multi-currency wallet / point of sale system, how can they get in touch with you? How can they find out more?
You can follow me on X. I'm at Aaron R. Day. And then this Wednesday at 8 o'clock, I'm going to be doing a podcast to lay out everything that we just discussed, but more importantly, I'm going to lay out all the steps of here's what's going on with CBDCs. Here's how we're under attack. I'm going to go through all of the details about what the federal government is doing. They've been targeting Liberty people since 2019. The DOJ has been going after people and actually basically extorting people to get information on others. I've done an interview with a guy named Steven Nerioff and some other things about this, but I've found that people in the crypto space and Liberty space are not aware of all of this. They're not aware of exactly how bad the crypto crackdown is. They're not aware of how developed CBDCs are. And so I think once people see the big picture, then I'm going to outline kind of this idea. But Twitter at Aaron R. Day is the best place to find me. And then I'm going to create a group around that. So coming off of my presentation on Wednesday, that's when we're going to start collecting people that are interested in this. And then I really wanted to find an event, maybe a 5-day in-person event where we just sit down and hammer this out. And again, I believe we can repurpose some existing code as a starting point so that it really is just a matter of saying, how do we tweak these things and get something out there as a minimum viable product that we can start and then build on from there?
Well, Aaron, I know obviously you are incredibly intensely aware of this, but for the audience who may not be aware of this, as we have alluded to many times, people in this space, especially people who are working on genuinely decentralized, genuinely fiat, anti-fiat, solutions on this in this way are being targeted right now. So I know you know the incredible threat that even proposing something like this, the Manhattan Project, brings upon yourself. I know you've committed yourself to this fight and are all in on it. But for people who haven't yet, they might want to think about why someone would be committing their life to this incredibly dangerous but incredibly necessary proposition. It is because we are facing a threat to human freedom itself on a scale that has never been before imaginable in human history. This is not a time to be asleep or to be on the sidelines. So I hope people realize the gravity of what we're talking about today and the importance of finding solutions. And maybe you have your own ideas and solutions. That's great. That's wonderful. Whatever it is, you need to be pressing on those ideas now while we have this brief window of opportunity before the final countdown runs out. On that note, lots and lots of different things that we've talked about today, that they will be referenced in the show notes if you need the links to Aaron Day's website, his book, his Twitter, or any of the other things that we've mentioned today. But I think we'll leave that there for now, but hopefully we can update on this project as it develops in the future. Aaron Day, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you for having me. Bye.